Righto. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming. On Monday, the government took a decision to alter the policy settings in respect of 1,300 or thereabouts Zimbabwean citizens currently in New Zealand who are part of the special Zimbabwean policy that my colleague David Cunliffe will give you the correct name for in a minute. The policy settings have changed as for the following reason. We have these people all came into New Zealand prior to HIV testing being implemented. That was implemented in November of 2005, and so these 1,300 people have not been HIV tested, except that 500 of them have, and the other 800 have not. In recent times, the government has become aware, admittedly only anecdotally, but the anecdotes are starting to become stronger, that some of these 800 people may not be presenting themselves for processing through immigration because of a fear that if they fail their HIV test that they would be returned to Zimbabwe. The prevalence of HIV in Zimbabwe is 20%, and so that if 20% were applied to that 800, that would give you 160 HIV positive people. As it happens, the prevalence rate from the 500 who have already been processed is not 20% but 8%. We're taking 20% as the figure, knowing that it's likely to be less than that, simply because we want to make sure that the costings and things are all done, and the costs of treating those folk would be in the order of just under $3 million per annum if they all needed retrovirals, which they wouldn't. But the key thing to say is that from a public health policy perspective, it is intolerable to have people who might have HIV, resident in New Zealand society, not knowing whether they are HIV positive. It is not, from a public policy perspective, as far as our public health system is concerned, it is not a tolerable position. The one takeout I would like to leave before passing on to my colleague, the Minister of Immigration, is this. The HIV virus flourishes wherever there is secrecy or denial, or wherever people try and hide from it. And conversely, the HIV virus is always on the back foot if we've got early diagnosis, if we've got a good access to medical treatment and an openness about the disease, sensitive though it may be. Accordingly, as Minister of Health, I'm delighted at my Cabinet's decision, and I look forward to us processing and sorting the needs of these 800 Zimbabweans as soon as possible. Those are my remarks. My colleague may wish to make some of his own.
Thank you, Pete. And very briefly, just to underscore that immigration policy is being amended here to put the public health interests of all New Zealanders first, as well as to take humanitarian steps to assist those 800 people who may or may not have HIV. We are doing this because of the special circumstances of Zimbabweans in New Zealand. We have a long-standing policy of abiding by UNHCR recommendations on the very small number of countries where it is considered inappropriate to repatriate people, and Zimbabwe is one of those very few countries because of the awful and oppressive nature of the Mugabe regime. That means that if we don't want the problem to go underground, we have to bring it out in the open, and as my colleague has said, that means we have to ensure that an HIV test is done and that it is not therefore a bar to residence on its own. Miriam Thompson later is going to take you through the operational aspects of how that will be handled, but I want to reiterate that this is the best decision for all New Zealanders. It's also the best decision for some people who may be fearful of their situation, and I strongly support the approach that my colleague Mr. Hodgson has taken.
Okay, now I'm going to ask Dr. Mark Jacobs to begin the process. We want to make sure that the media are well aware of all of the details of this and indeed any questions they might have about the diseases involved. And that's one reason why we're here. The other reason that we're here is that it's a brand new building. I hope you like it. Got opened last night. And then we'll get Marion Thompson to speak a little about the immigration details. So, Dr. Jacobs.
Thanks, Minister. I was just going to make a few very brief comments. I'll wait till the microphone's repositioned. From the Ministry's perspective, our focus is on prevention of the spread of HIV. I mean, that is our priority. And that's not just a New Zealand priority, it's the global priority. Prevention's the mainstay of the response to the HIV pandemic right around the world, and that was reiterated at the recent United Nations General Assembly special session on HIV in New York. It only happened in June of this year. Now, HIV testing and counselling are paramount in both treatment and prevention. And client-initiated testing is really critical to that process. So there's a lot of evidence that shows that voluntary testing is actually more likely to relate to changing behaviours so that the behaviours avoid further spread of HIV. So it really is something that's in the interest of both the individual being tested and also of the broader community. Now, the Ministry believes that it's important that these individuals are tested so that they're able to get early access to treatment, which obviously improves their own health outcomes. But again, it also helps reduce the risk to the broader community, so it really is in everybody's interest that this happens. Now, early testing and diagnosis is important for access to treatment, and certainly early treatment assists in the effective management of HIV. But as I've mentioned, it's also an important aspect of effective prevention. So treating somebody with HIV can reduce the amount of virus that's circulating in their blood, and so it actually makes it harder for them to pass on the virus to other people. Now, obviously, the medicines that are available now are very effective for the great majority of people who live with HIV. They provide good treatment outcomes. They enable people to live, you know, healthy and productive lives for a long time in the community, and that's obviously great. The final statement I just wanted to make was just to flag that we're also working with the AIDS Foundation through funding some outreach work that they're doing, working with African communities, including the Zimbabwean community across New Zealand, to really do things like encourage HIV testing, encourage access to counselling, provide support, those sorts of really fundamental things. That's really the end of what I was going to say. Obviously, Rachel may well want to make some comments in a few moments about that outreach project, but first, if I could pass across to Marianne Thompson from Immigration.
As from today, when the policy comes into effect, those eligible will not need to meet the acceptable standard of health. As part of the operational process, they will still need to undertake a medical screening so that they can actually find out what their status is and they can receive the support that they need in treatment. They'll also have to meet the good character policy, so that those who want to get into the residence as part of this, they'll still need to have the new the right level of character testing. They'll have to meet that. That is a bottom line. So my immigration officers at the front line will be looking for that to also occur. People have till the end of February to apply. So this is a window of opportunity for people to come forward. And we would urge those 800 people that haven't come forward to do that. Essentially, those on temporary permits may have those extended because the process does take quite a bit of time. So those people will still have legal and lawful status in New Zealand. We don't give out residence lightly to any migrant in terms of the operational process, so they will have to meet the character test. The UNHCR has recommended that people not be removed to Zimbabwe. This is an important factor that we do take into consideration, and there are a small number of countries which this applies to. We have spoken to the UNHCR and they are very supportive of this policy. I've spoken to the representative in Canberra and he's delighted with where New Zealand is going in this regard, and so is Geneva. But those are the comments that I have today.
Okay. Rachel, I wonder if you would... Thanks for coming. I wonder if you'd be good enough to just introduce yourself so that the... we've got about 20 people in this room and you'll come across nice and clearly. Just tell us who you are and make any remarks you want to.
Greetings, everyone. It's Rachel Amasurier from the New Zealand AIDS Foundation. The AIDS Foundation really welcomes this initiative taken by government, and whilst we're very, very clear that there's no dispute that Zimbabwe is an unsafe place for anyone to return to, it's particularly a cruel and quite horrible thing to do to someone who is HIV positive, to send them back to Zimbabwe. As a humanitarian gesture for the 800 Zimbabweans who are covered in this case, this will ensure the few that are HIV positive and don't know they are currently will be able to have an HIV test without fear. And that fear, we understood, was very, very high levels because of the anxiety of the impact a positive result would have on those on their stay and their families' future well-being and security. The AIDS Foundation has been asked by the African community to jointly run an African HIV prevention program, which is going really well, and we're also doing work on a more one-to-one basis to assisting those who know they're HIV positive and progressing their residency applications. I think at the end of the day, I just wanted to really acknowledge that what both ministers have drawn attention to is that HIV flourishes in an environment of fear, denial and discrimination. And we were fearful that we could see that was a possible outcome of the changes that occurred last year around the immigration policies. I think key to our work is challenging discrimination and stigma, and our experience with the gay and bisexual community who have been living with HIV is that this is some of the things that they've had to deal with. So it's crucial from today that we recognise and support the challenge the Zimbabwean community has and make sure it's not stigmatised but supported and empowered to respond to the issue of HIV in an appropriate and effective manner.
Okay, thanks, Rachel. Now, people may have questions. I hope we've assembled the right level of expertise. If we haven't, we might have to reach out there for more. But if people want to ask any questions, they should feel free.
To the Minister of Immigration, in 2004, the National Opposition and Federated Farmers were insistent that basically you let the Zimbabweans stay. Do you think you got a bit of an easy ride and you didn't pick this up then? Just because the opposition was so insistent that you let these Zimbabweans stay in New Zealand?
Kevin, I'm not probably the best person to ask a question about the blow-by-blow in 2004. What I know firsthand is that when I became Minister of Immigration in late 2005, shortly after that, I became aware of concerns about an unquantified fear that some Zimbabweans may be HIV positive and that we may need to ascertain the facts there. And ensure that our migration policy supported our public health policy. We felt it was very important that we didn't have a knee-jerk reaction, that we fronted the issue honestly, that we had a solution, and that we move forward to ensure that the public health of New Zealanders and Zimbabweans is protected, and I think that's what we're delivering today.
In 1999, though, Zimbabwe had the second highest rate of AIDS in Africa. Surely someone should have picked up a trick.
Look, I think hindsight's always 20/20, and we need to cast our minds back to what was in the public mind and in the political mind at that time, recognising that this is not a party-specific thing. It was the previous government that brought in the visa-free policy. The decisions were made in 1999 around that. And people's overwhelming concern was to avert a humanitarian crisis that resulted from the repressive nature of the Mugabe regime. And we're all familiar with the stories of, you know, farmers being burnt off their land and coming to New Zealand for safe haven. And that's the genesis of this. It's been a long story. The visa-free status was suspended in 2003. Cabinet ordered work on a stronger mandatory health testing regime, and that work went underway and of course was brought in last year.
Is there just one other thing, is there a rate between, say, the white farm community and the black community? Is the rates the same or are they different?
No, the prevalence is higher amongst the black community. We have a mix of both in New Zealand.
Do you have any figures though?
I don't have exact numbers because we don't require a tick box on an ethnicity on the immigration form. A sample that was done earlier would indicate it was around about 50-50.
Is that 50-50 for all Zimbabweans in New Zealand?
Around about.
What about for the 800 who haven't been...
Our best guess is that it's probably around about 50-50, and we will get more precise data as people come forward.
Has this been an issue with refugees from other countries?
Not in the same sense. Zimbabwe is a special case because, of course, as Marianne Thompson's explained, there are very strong reasons why we wouldn't repatriate people to Zimbabwe. Normally, if a migrant is coming to New Zealand, and especially for many years people have been required to declare whether they had HIV, if they have declared fraudulently and that's provable, then they would be subject to revocation of their permit. In this case, mandatory testing has been brought in, and we would know now the health status of anybody who's migrating permanently to New Zealand.
But you do raise a good point. I mean, it's a risk management thing. You look at where someone comes from, you look at the prevalence, you look at how many people, and you make a judgment. I'm not the Minister of Tourism, but there's 1 or 2 or 3 million people come into New Zealand each year, not all of whom are going to be entirely celibate during their time. And so migration causes, of any sort, causes risk. But the level of risk here is, from a public health perspective, was not tolerable.
That's right. I mean, the level of risk around migration of any kind, including tourism, is never zero. We have to build the best system we can to minimise and manage those risks. And as my colleague has said, there's particular reasons for taking particular action in this case.
What's the likelihood that HIV could have been spread in the last few years from these people here who we may have identified as carrying it?
Well, all HIV came from offshore because HIV did not start its life in New Zealand and has spread around the world variously and continues to. So it's back to risk management. You know, we all know that somewhere the first HIV virus ever to cross our border came from somewhere, we'll never know. And even today continues, probably two-directional actually, to flow to and from our across our borders. Now, when that situation exists, the public health response is always about prevention, always about risk management, always about early diagnosis and good medical treatment and openness, and never about the opposite. Denial, delay, stigma, because wherever you've got that, in any part of the world, the virus just takes off. Takes off. It gets away on you. And if you've got daylight, you can suppress it. In fact, quite a lot of African countries have now got reducing HIV prevalence rates because of their openness.
Do you have any estimates or worst-case scenarios of what the flow-on infection rate could have been from the Zimbabweans who are in New Zealand that haven't been?
Maybe helpful if I were to, Dr. Jacobs will tell me whether I've got this wrong. There are about 2,000 or 2,500 people in New Zealand now who are HIV positive. We're going to be adding to that number somewhere up to 160.
Minister, can I say something at this point?
Yeah, please.
Thank you. To be quite correct, there have been 2,000, the figure that 2,474 as diagnosed in December 2005. We have to acknowledge about 600 to 700 of those have died of AIDS. So the actual number of people living with HIV in New Zealand is more like 1,700.
Thank you.
It's quite rough to know that too, because of course we don't check in respect to New Zealanders who go out of New Zealand who are HIV positive, nor New Zealanders who come home who are HIV positive. So it has to be, unfortunately, at this point in time, approximate. And can I also just refer to the fact in respect to the transmissions within New Zealand, people who are becoming infected within New Zealand, the majority, overwhelming majority, 83% last year, were gay men or bisexual men. The heterosexual transmissions, and that though they are smaller, have primarily been from people coming home or migrants such as the Zimbabwean community not knowing they're HIV positive. The transmissions within New Zealand that are heterosexual are extremely low. So at this point in time, we would say that the risk is being managed. It can be managed much better with the sort of initiative that's been taken today.
I'm glad she turned off.
Thanks, Rachel. Did the Peter Mwai case not ring any alarm bells?
I'm sorry, could
Peter
you...
Peter Mwai?
Could you say that again?
Peter Mwai, MWA.
Yeah, it's often a good idea not to personalise HIV and not to deploy the demon factor by naming someone, because, of course, what we don't know is how many other people are of that ilk who have not been made... if you will, a public event. And that's one of the interesting things about HIV is when you do that, you tend to end up with a worse public health outcome than when you don't.
Just a question for Marian Thompson. What happens with these 800 people who haven't been tested that you want to come forward? If they fail an HIV test but also fail other medical tests for other diseases, what happens then? Are they still able to gain?
They're exempted. Essentially, they're exempted for the entire health test.
Right.
We would expect a bit of TB, wouldn't we?
Yeah, almost certainly.
So going forward from here on in, if, say, we were to take some refugees from Darfur or something this year, what would be the process to ensure that this doesn't happen again? Or if those people were found to be HIV positive, is that grounds for saying no and turning them back? Or what do we do?
That's a very simple one to answer. All permanent migrants now are required to take a mandatory set of health tests, including an HIV test, whether they're refugees or coming in under another permanent category. So this is an historical problem which we are seeking to create a current solution to. We don't anticipate that this is a problem that will occur in this way again.
And so from now on then, if you tested HIV positive, you would be sent home?
You wouldn't be accepted for permanent residence unless you got a health waiver. They would be fairly rare, and there would have to be special circumstances for that that outweighed the risk and cost to the country of your condition, whatever that was.
So that could be countries like, you know, Zimbabwe. How you said there was a small number of countries where the risk to those people going home is so high that we can't sort of safely send them home. You know?
No, but after the visa-free status was terminated, essentially people have to apply for residence or for temporary work permits, and their bona fides is that they're returning home, so it's not the same situation that we have.
Just a question for Pete Hodgson there. Did you expect a lot of support coming from Tony Ryle, seeing as how he was when he was immigration spokesman, so supportive of your government in accepting these people?
I actually really, really try hard not to do politics when HIV is the subject. I try very hard not to do politics when HIV is the subject. And when politics does infest...
Have you discussed it with me?
No. When politics does infest HIV, and I've watched it all around the world, I was at UNGAS in New York that Dr. Jacobs mentioned, the result is never good.
Is that a dig at criticism?
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not a dig at anyone. It's me saying I'm paid as a politician, and right now you can judge it as you will. I don't do politics with this disease. Politics always makes the disease worse. Always.
The critics are going to say maybe your political...
Minister, can I say something at that point?
Sure.
Minister?
Go right ahead.
So just to say that in respect to the New Zealand AIDS Foundation's experience in our full 21 years, which has been through a range of different governments, that has been, fortunately, the position that New Zealanders have taken from in respect to the political parties that have been in power. We have had support from the National Party and from Labour and through the NMP period. So I would endorse the fact that it's been New Zealand's track history to ensure that, regardless of the politics, the HIV and AIDS has overridden it.
I was going to say critics will say, but I'll phrase that. Critics may say that the HIV rates in Zimbabwe were known back in 2004. We didn't test them then, and this is just playing catch-up, and it could have done a lot of damage to the health and well-being of New Zealanders. What's your reaction going to be to those sorts of criticisms?
I think they're probably fair. I think that it's always... You can always say that you should have instituted HIV testing earlier, but then again, you have to draw the line. And you could institute HIV testing broadly for anyone travelling across our borders, in either direction, actually, of any citizenship. That, of course, is not an acceptable proposition. So somewhere the line has to be drawn. And whenever you draw a line, people will say you should have drawn it in a different place. And that may be correct, but a line nonetheless has to be drawn, and last November it was.
Where geographically in New Zealand are most of these Zimbabweans living?
Rachel, the question was, I don't know whether you know the answer to it, but I don't know, or in fact immigration may know, where do Zimbabweans live in New Zealand? Has anyone got an answer? Rachel?
Well, I mean, my answer would be that they are both in the cities and in rural areas in the same way that other migrants are. And I think that that's something that is really key around how we all work with this information, is to ensure that wherever Zimbabweans are living and or African communities are living, we have to be conscious and be very clear that they are a welcome part of our society as other migrants, as permanent residents, and I think that's quite crucial.
One of them was around at my place Sunday night before last for dinner, if that helps.
Are there specific clusters is what I wanted to know.
Not in my experience. Does anyone else want to comment on that? Do Zimbabweans cluster or do they disperse?
We thought that there was some of a cluster up. Was it in Auckland?
Yeah.
There's quite a big population in Auckland and Wellington, and of course, as Rachel said, right throughout the rural community as well. So
okay,
they're much less clustered.
In the money. So obviously DHBs, some of them, or most of them, are struggling, you know, with their budgets already. There's another $3 million a year almost. Is that going to be additional money that you're going to give to the DHBs, and will Auckland and Wellington get, you know, a larger chunk of that because they have more?
Probably not. Haven't thought about it. Don't actually know how many people we're dealing with yet. And when we have tested them all, don't know how many of those need retrovirals. So the $3 million is almost certainly an upper limit, or 2.9 or whatever it is. And just to give you some perspective, I'm not trying to minimise the issue, because extra costs do go onto DHBs, and I am mindful of the fact that they are under continuous pressure. But to give you a perspective, the total budget for DHBs is a little more than $3 million. It's $7,500 million. So there's the sort of size of the problem.
And it's worth also saying that on some economic estimates of the benefits of migration, we're talking about $6.5 billion a year. So we're talking about an infinitesimally small cost, relatively speaking, not to say that it is insignificant. And yet this whole policy is designed to stop the problem getting worse. And that is by bringing it out into the open and making sure that people get tested and get treated before it spreads.
Speaking of the problem getting worse, if he had 2,300 on the special residence permit, are they eligible to bring a family?
They're eligible to apply, but there's no automatic right. The applications would be considered on a case-by-case basis.
And they would potentially make the problem worse.
And they would be screened.
And they would be screened, but...
We introduced screening 9 months ago.
And anybody who came in as the family member of a Zimbabwean already in New Zealand would have to go through the mandatory health screening. If they had a problem with HIV, they would need to seek a health waiver, and that would be on a case-by-case basis.
We done?
I'm just aware that ministers have to go. I might just ask one question. You may have already covered it, I'm not sure, but why not open up this provision to any immigrant who may be here illegally and scared to come forward and apply for residency because of fear of having HIV?
Well, I think for reasons that we've already discussed about the UNHCR recommendation and the terrible situation in Zimbabwe, Zimbabwe is a relatively special case, and it's certainly the predominant case that we're aware of where we've got a potential HIV problem in New Zealand. That's why we're addressing this one first. As my colleague has said, we're continually having to balance risks and benefits. And if other problems arise in future, we'll take the appropriate steps. But this is what we know today, and I think we're doing the right thing to fix it.
And we do, as Rachel told you, we do fund New Zealand, the AIDS Foundation, and have a bunch of other programs to make sure we've got good outreach into vulnerable communities, whether those are migrants from certain areas or homosexual communities or whatever it may be. That's why our prevalence rate is quite low. It's not 20%, it's less than 0.1%.
And is that where a lot of your anecdotal evidence has come from?
Rachel, I heard Rachel use language I hadn't heard her use before, which you may want to come in, Rachel. You said that you'd been, about 5 or 10 minutes ago, you said something like you were aware of people's extreme fear or language like that at coming forward. Do you want to
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question. Could the question be repeated?
Yeah, the question is, where did the anecdotes come from? I had said we've got outreach and we go into vulnerable communities, and the question came back, is that where your anecdotes came from?
That is a fair comment, but it wasn't just those within the community, including the Zimbabwean community. I think it's really worth noting that the Zimbabwean community has been taking responsibility and trying to very much lead in what needs to happen, which is fundamental if we're going to be successful. But the clinicians themselves were also saying that they were seeing some people come through with AIDS diagnosis who had avoided testing. So in other words, they became sick before they actually had got in touch with the health system. So those are some quite clear. That wasn't so much anecdotal.
No, that's not anecdote.
So the mixture of both.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to clarify, sorry. Mm. So the DHBs will be expected to absorb the costs. There is going to be no...
Let me try and give you another answer. Well, it's the same answer, but I hope I'll make it more clear. Mm. We don't know the cost. We've got a rough idea of what the upper limit is.
Yep.
2.9 million. Could be half of that, could be less, could be more. I don't currently have an intention to specially fund that any more than I intend to specially fund a bad flu season or an outbreak of measles or whatever. Okay, so the answer is probably no. But I am always open to knowledge that's coming from the DHB sector about how they are concerned about this or meeting this or that cost. So it's you know, you never say never, but I've got no intention at the moment of putting extra money in because I doubt that it'll be needed.
Thank you.
That's all right.
Thank you, Rachel. It's very kind of you to give up your time.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay.
And I'll see you tomorrow, Rachel.
Okay. Bye-bye.